Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversation. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines. My guest today is Ainsley Dammery, CEO and co-founder of Clarity HQ. Welcome to the show, Ainsley.
Liz, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to have you, and I'm just thrilled that you said yes when I reached out to you. Now, we have a lot to get to cover, so let's jump in. Now, accounting talent in the U.S. and around the world has been scarce for years. COVID and the Great Resignation made it all worse. What are some ideas that you have on how to make things better?
Well, I think firstly, I think it's worth mentioning that the problem is only going to get worse. So we have been talking about this in the profession for I don't know how long. It has certainly exacerbated in the last 2 years, but I think that is going to get absolutely worse. We've got fewer and fewer people joining the profession. The Big Four have just massively hiked salaries and the incentives that they're providing. And with the more complex work that's happening at the moment, they're going to take on more and more team to be able to deal with that. So I think the rest of us accountants are going to struggle in that talent pool. So I think it's really vital that we get to grips with offshoring and leveraging technology. We've talked about it for a long time now. I think it's time we got to grips with it. And in the UK, certainly, there has been that fear with offshoring that we're depriving our talent here with work. And maybe our clients may not accept foreigners who are going to be dealing with their work or doing their work. But I think we've seen how actually offshoring can make a massive difference to accounting firms. It can give that capacity, free up that capacity, and it can enable our onshore team to do better work, higher valuable work, more challenging and exciting work. And actually, that's helpful, I think, long term, not only just dealing with the work, but for finding great people and retaining those great people as well. So I think that's really, really critical. And I think the leveraging technology, we've talked about automation and technology for a long time. I think we're still at the stage, I'm not sure we're late majority yet in much of the cloud's technology, but I think it's really important that we understand that we need technology to do that heavy lifting. I think a lot of the failures with technology has been change management. I think we've not acknowledged that technology isn't the silver bullet. It's not a panacea. It is part of people, process, and technology. They're working together, they are the right combination. So I think offshoring and leveraging technology are critical for us going forward to be able to deal with the shortages of talent that are out there, definitely.
I agree with you on all of those fronts. And I agree that offshoring probably will help a lot, because it doesn't make sense to have a very highly paid CPA doing data entry.
Correct.
Which is what I was doing the last few years I was in public accounting.
Yeah.
And it just didn't make.
No.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And what are some things that you've seen firms do successfully?
Well, it's interesting. Actually, before we get onto that, there was a very interesting survey done by the outsourced accountant, TOA, which is also, they operate in the US, they're good friends of ours. They surveyed 1,100 people recently, 1,100 accountants, and 75% were suggesting that they were going to look for a new job in the next 12 months. So that's quite startling. If 75% of our workforce is looking for new jobs at the moment. Now, the good thing is we have them, but still. So it's about retention and retraining, I think, which are critical for us going forward. I think the more successful firms, I don't think they're doing anything magical, Liz. It's not something, there's no rocket science. There's no crazy thing they're doing here. I just think they are doing the basics really, really well. I think they're inspiring the team. They're engaging with them. They're involving them in part of the decision-making process. So rather than just dictating what needs to happen, they're involving them in the whole process. I also think they're very, very clear on what the bigger picture is. and why that's important. So I think they explain the clarity, you know, of the vision and where the purpose of the firm and where it's going and why that's the way. They do a great job of involving the team in that and really, again, inspiring them to take action. I think it's about that kind of this obsession with culture. We think culture is a kind of soft word, and maybe in accounting, mm-hmm. we like, oh, culture. But, you know, that culture is critical, and an obsession with culture, getting the right culture is really, you know, the leader's job in any organization. And I think for too often, we might do a core value session in accounting and stick them up on the wall and, you know, maybe revisit mm-hmm. them once a year, but that's it. I think it's really important that we pursue the culture we want to exist in the accounting firm. I think culture exists anyway. It's important that we control how the culture is in our firm. And we were obsessive about creating a continuous improvement culture and a culture of not accepting the status quo, of challenging the status quo. And that was really important. And it gave value to the people who are part of the accounting firm. I think the challenging work is critical that we talked about with that offshoring piece. I think, you know, nobody wants to sit there data entering. Nobody. It's mundane, it's routine, it would just drive you up the walls. So I think it's really important that we find great team and we keep them by giving them great work to do and giving them a bigger purpose rather than just doing accounts and tax returns. So I think it is that bigger piece, a piece that's been talked about for quite a while. And I know you're going to get onto that a little later, but I think it's really important that we focus on that challenging work that really makes people want to come in the morning and not go, oh, golly, I've got to enter whatever I've got to do. So I think that upskilling piece, I saw a survey in Accountancy Age in the UK, and it was a survey of under 41 in the accounting world, under 41s. And I think 73% of them said that delivering strategic business services was going to be critical going forward to really help what's happening in the world. And 78% of them said that they didn't have the skills necessary to be able to deal with that in their future roles. And I think that's going to be where we can really show how we can help them by upskilling them, by giving them the training, the support, the systems and the processes that are going to really enhance their career going forward.
I really think that you've hit on something, that it's the upskilling that will be crucial, because the firms that I was at had these lofty vision goals, but we didn't have the skills or the tools to put any of that into place. And so these vision statements were something that looked beautiful on the wall, but they really didn't become part of what we did as a firm. And I think that is crucial for leadership to pay attention to. You know, not all leaders will do that, but that is something that has to be done. Absolutely. Now, until recently, the business model for accounting firms really hadn't changed much. But we are seeing firms move away from the billable hour. We're seeing them move away from the strictly hierarchical organizational structures. What are some of the things that you are seeing in the firms that you work with?
I think in the UK, we seem to have lost the billable hour a little bit ahead of the US. But that brought its own challenges too.
Yeah,
you know, firms tried to replace that billable hour with, they had three-tier pricing. So, you know, gold, silver, bronze, gold, whatever, or introduce fixed fees effectively, which is what was happening. I don't think people truly grasped value pricing. And so it was easier to settle for fixed pricing, fixed fees. And I think that fixed fee came with an element of unlimited. So whether it was unlimited calls or unlimited support or something tended to be in mm-hmm. there. And we saw a huge scope creep. So firms were doing, you know, accountants are desperate to please. We love pleasing. And the team tend to get a little bit too excited, you know, over servicing clients sometimes. And clients can be a little bit cheeky in asking for work without expecting to pay extra for an extra work order.
Yes.
And I think we saw profits dip because of the introduction of that fixed fee and the move away from billable hour. I think in the UK, we've not really grasped value pricing yet. Yes, in tax work and yes, in corporate finance. But I think in general compliance, certainly, and I think it's probably impossible to bring in value pricing for compliance, but even on the advisory side, we've tended to see people do menu pricing or to do some hybrid combination of that. And I think it's a bit of a shame. So I think that really hasn't quite clicked yet. And I had an interesting chat with Ron Baker a couple of months ago on value pricing 2.0 and the subscription model. And I think, you know, that's something that I think firms are going to have to get to grips with in the future. I think it is important. And I think there's been some really interesting examples of how people have adapted value pricing and taken it onto that next level outside the accounting industry, particularly. So it'd be interesting to see how we get to grips with that. But I also acknowledge with your point on the organizational structures, again, I'm going to point out another flaw rather than a benefit here, but we've tended to move to that corporate structure in the UK, but we still operated in silos. So every partner tended to do things differently, had a different way, and had a different purpose and vision and expectation and anticipation of what was going to happen in that accounting firm. And they didn't really work together. And I've never quite understood this. I don't understand why in accounting, how we can have a technical partner who can be the marketing partner or the market head of marketing or the head of sales or the head of HR. I just don't understand why that happens. And like in no other industry do our technical team do the sales as well. It just would be unheard of. But yet in accounting, we do that. Now, I'm not saying don't involve the partners because obviously it's a people-to-people business. But I do find it unusual that we really haven't grasped that organizational structure in accounting. Yes, in the bigger firms, but not in the from the mid-tiers down. I think we're operating in silos. So I think it would be nice to see that come into play. And I think the understanding of how to price better than the billable hour, we still haven't quite cracked that. I'm not sure we ever will. I'm not sure pricing is an easy thing to get to grips with.
Yeah, pricing is really difficult. It's something that I struggle with in my writing business as well. And so, you know, I try to look at it as well. What is the value to the person? How many hours would they have to give up to produce this work if they had to do it themselves? I think that we'll figure it out. It may not be in our lifetimes, but we will figure it out.
Do you think that accountants have this imposter syndrome and maybe don't feel worthy enough, so therefore are feel awkward about having that pricing conversation and about really charging what they're truly worth? Do you think that's part of the problem?
Absolutely. I think that's a big part of the problem. Because, you know, I've had this conversation with many others, with people from audit to tax consulting to accounting, that the first thing that they do when a client complains about the price is cut it back down instead of saying, well, you don't really recognize the value that we have brought to you. So if you don't recognize that value, then you are free to take your business elsewhere because we have a line of people waiting to get in. Yeah. You know, and going back to what you said about the silos, you know, I experienced that firsthand as just a staff person trying to navigate the different partners. You know, I would ask one partner how he wanted something done, and I would get a completely different answer from the one I got from partner B, and it was just incredibly confusing. And this is something that's rampant.
Yep.
You know, it's just a nightmare. Now, what about growing? How do firms grow? And are there different strategies for a solo practice or a multi-partner practice?
Interesting. I think let's go to that second bit first. I think in the UK, I know some of the most successful firms are solo practitioners because whilst they're solo practitioners, they have a decent team and potentially they don't have the wrong combination or the ratio of team to partner. And maybe being that benevolent dictator might actually mean things get done faster and quicker and decisions are made potentially. I don't know. But I think in reality, I don't think there are different tactics and tools that are necessary for growth. I think it's truly understanding what your clients are looking for and delivering it to them. That sounds easy. And everybody goes, of course, things, that just makes common sense, understanding what they want and delivering. Well, I don't think many accountants truly understand what their clients are looking for. I think we sell them, you know, accounts and tax returns, yes, we sell them that. But if we move up the scale, we flog them cash flow forecasting, KPIs and dashboards, management reporting, reporting packs. I think we're missing the point about what those do to help small business owners. And I think, you know, if we go back to why people go into business in the first place, it's generally because they've left corporate life. They want to have more freedom. They want more control over their working environments. They want to make more money. And they probably want to cut down the hours that they're working. So it's a combination of money, time, and freedom, I guess, that most people are looking for. And if we're not selling that, and we're talking about management reporting and cash flow forecasting, and not really engaging with our clients on why that's important and what that's going to do for them, then I think we're struggling to grow our accounting firm. Now, it's been interesting actually seeing some organic growth that's happening post the pandemic. So those firms that were there to support their clients, that were open, that were adopting technology, that were being there 100%. And I know that sounds like the logical thing. Of course, accountants were there. Well, yes, a large tranche of them were, but there was a lot that weren't. And I think we're seeing that there's a lot of just organic acquisition of clients that is happening at the moment. So those business owners have got a little bit fed up and have decided, okay, now's the time to change. And I really want to go to a firm that's going to give me truly what I want, because accounts and tax returns, I have to have them. They're not adding any value. I resent paying for them. And I want somebody who's going to listen to me, understand my hopes, my fears, my vision, what the challenges are, and be able to be there to support me. I'm not looking for all the answers, but I'm looking for the support, that intelligent friends, that trusted advisor to be able to sit with me and help me navigate my way going forward. So I think the services and the added value services that we offer, I think making sure that the pricing for those is right, avoiding as much scope creep as possible, not over-engineering the compliance function. So those accounts and tax returns, which we seem to over-engineer to death, stop doing that. And I think growth will come. So I think that's I think, important, that client-centric, focused purpose and vision for your firm. And if you're not adding value for your clients, then I don't really know why you're in business.
I think that that's really crucial. And I think that, you know, accountants fear that approach because they're often afraid that they don't have the answers. And they don't like to ask questions that they don't know the answers to.
Well, isn't that absolute 100%? I think it's more about asking more questions than giving less advice. I think that's the critical skill switch that we need to get involved with when we're talking to business owners, because we can all argue black and blue in advance. We can all theorize. We can all have ideas about what's going to work and what's not going to work. But ultimately in business, if you don't try something, put in place a plan, measure and monitor it, and then quickly understand whether that works or not before you double down on it, I think that's you know, nobody knows what's right or wrong in business, or nobody knows the answers. We might guess, but we don't know. And I think that's really important mindset shift for accountants. You know, we need to know the tax legislation. We need to know the double entry treatment. But when we get to that business side, we can't know all the answers. And it is about being the dumb person in the room. It's about asking the why, asking questions and asking more questions than you give advice, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really think it's trying to understand why this business owner is doing what they are doing. And all too often, we neglect to ask, well, what is your long-term goal for this business? Do you want to sell it in 5 years? Do you want to work it for another 20 and then pass it to your children? What do you want? Because if we don't know what they are trying to do, we certainly can't help them get there.
Yep, 100%. Yeah. We're in total agreement. Is this going to become us agreeing with each other all the way through, I think?
Yes, well, I generally agree with most of my guests, and that's because I've picked the people whose ideas I resonate with.
Good.
I have not chosen the people that I used to work with. Now, it used to be that to be really good as an accountant, you had to keep the tax code in your head and the accounting regulations, and you also had to be really good with the 10 key. But technology has changed a lot of that. So what are the skills that accountants need to be successful in the future?
I think it's the softer skills. I think that's what we need to get right. So it's that emotional intelligence rather than intellection. So that EQ versus IQ, I think is really important. So I think we can sometimes, because we're in the numbers all the time, we can sometimes, as you said earlier, forget to step back and understand what is the purpose of these numbers in the first place. What is the business owner looking for? What motivates them? What gets them up in the morning? And what are they looking for out of their business? So I think it is that emotional intelligence versus intellectual intelligence. I think also, I think this is probably going to maybe upset a few people, but I think in accountants, there's a lot of ego. And I think this desire to be the hero. Now, I know we all want to be a hero, but I think accountants need to understand that they're not the heroes in this story, that they're actually the guide. Mm-hmm. And they're the people who are helping their clients become the heroes. And shining the light on them is going to have the exact effect that they're looking for. It's going to shine the light on the firm in the end. But I think it's understanding that we need to get out of our ways sometimes. That we need to be the ones who's asking the questions and helping our clients understand the right answers rather than always giving them the advice. And I know that goes against the grain because obviously in a tax perspective, that's not the case. But we're talking business advisory here, I suppose, more than anything else. I think the communication skills are going to become critical because I think we're going to lose a lot of that communication skill exchange that happened when we were all in the office and when we were all going to three people going to a meeting all the time, and that inherent skill exchange that happens from a communication perspective. So I think we're going to have to work really hard going forward because we've all been on Zoom or Blue Jeans or whatever it is for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's important that we upskill, again, this upskilling, that we upskill our team in how to communicate really, really well. They're possibly missing out on some of the things that we got to experience and got to learn about communication. So I think that's going to be critical. And I think that's selling skill. Sales is a dirty word in accounting. We don't like to talk about money, and we don't like certainly selling. I think we're going to have to get better at being able to explain the value we're able to deliver and about being able to communicate clearly what we can do to make a difference and what we're going to charge for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was fortunate in a firm that I spent 11 years at that the founder was still there. And he did very little hands-on work. He didn't even review tax returns. But what he did was meet with the clients, and he had that golden touch of communicating with them, talking to them, and really trying to be an advocate for them. And I think that is something that the next generation of accountants kind of forgot how to do because they were focused on the billable hour and they were focused on minimizing those billable hours to keep the clients happy.
Yeah.
And I think the pendulum is now swinging the other way, that we understand that it really is those long conversations, those in-depth questions that really are the magic that we can bring to the relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it is interesting, I suppose, old school accounting and how we got so far away from that. And you're right, I mean, it's definitely where we need to get to. And I do think that the billable hour has a lot to blame for that. You are correct. It's got to be do last year, but do it quicker. Is effectively, yes. I worked at KPMG, and I mean there's the file. That's last year's. Do it faster and do it. I shouldn't probably say that, but that's what you're encouraged to do. You know, you've got budgets, recoverability targets to hit, and I think by forcing that down on people, then of course you're not going to get your knowledge workers who are going to sit there thinking about how they can improve this business. You're going to get them thinking, yeah, well, how can I get this done as quickly as possible and at the door so that we're not going to get into trouble? Agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not thinking, well, can I use this technology tool that will slow me down initially until I learn to use it, but will give me greater insights in the long run? They're just thinking about, well, there's the work paper from last year. Let me find the documents from this year that look like that and then put them together and get the numbers right. And that's not very intellectually challenging.
No, indeed.
No. Now, accountants have a lot on their plates these days. They've got to deal with compliance. They've got to do a lot of handholding. But along the way, they've picked up some rather bad habits. Now, what should accountants stop doing immediately?
I think, can I have two things that they should stop doing immediately?
You can, as many as you want.
I think we need to stop treating all clients as equal. So I think that's crucial. I think, unfortunately, this wanting to please mentality has meant that we are doing the wrong stuff with the wrong clients often. And when we're overwhelmed and when we haven't got the time, and when we say, oh, that's lovely, but I don't have the time, or oh my God, this is a nightmare, it's generally because we've got a lot of D's and E clients that are actually sucking the resources from us, not allowing us to spend the time that we should be doing on our great clients. And I think those that shout the loudest and complain the most, and those people that are always aggressive, we tend to overfocus on and to deliver too much. I think it's important that we realize that not all clients are equal, that we accept that fact, and actually we get rid of our D's and E's as fast as we can. We know it's the right thing to do. You know, mm-hmm. I think the problem is that we have this 80-20 mentality with our client base, I think. So we think, oh, well, 20% of our clients generate 80% of our revenue, and the other 80% are at least generating 20%. But I don't think that's true. I actually think that 80% are sucking and actually are stealing profit. And I think if we focused on those 20%, we'd find that potentially our 20% were generating 225% of our revenue, as studies show, and that remaining 80% are stealing 125% to bring us back down to our 100% profit. So I think if we go in with that mentality and we realize that the D's and E's are actually stealing money, not contributing just a little bit, then I think we might take bigger action. So I think by freeing up our time, it will mean the team will be happier. It will mean the firm will become more profitable, and it means that we are actually doing better work with our better clients. And, you know, I know it's a big, I suppose, change to get rid of a large tranche of your clients, but I think by, you know, packaging them up, what are your D's and E's might be somebody else's A's and B's. So I think there's ways that we can do this, and ways that we can do it in that you don't feel like you're going to lose a lot of revenue really, really fast. I think those that can make that decision and take action quickly will probably see a very fast return. You can, of course, do it slower, like Mike Michailowicz is the pumpkin plan, where you can, you know, just recycle and recycle and go up and up. And so for what I used to say to friends that worked in accounting firms, I would say, well, if you take on a $10,000 client, then get rid of $10,000 worth of your D's and E's, so that at least you're staying at the same point. And it's amazing how that, if that's constantly done, how much of a difference you'll make to the firm. I think the challenge for a lot of firms is they have those D's and E's and they take on more D's and E's and they don't have a clear client selection policy and they end up just doing more and more and more and getting stuck in that rut. So I think stop treating all clients as equal is critical on getting rid of those D's and E's. And I think the other thing is to stop saying yes. I think the default answer needs to be no. And then think about why it might be a yes. No, but I think needs to be the response that we default to, not yes, I'll do that. So I think critical that we get that no, but, and then think about it. Don't always say yes.
Wow. That no, but that could be fighting words for a lot of clients, a lot of accounting firm owners, you know, that we've been raised to think that the client is always and always, always right. And so saying no is going to be a very hard thing to do for many accountants.
Well, this is the beauty. We can test it with a few and see what happens. We don't have to say no to all of our clients. And this is the interesting thing we were talking about earlier as well. When I was working in accounting, if we put a price increase, my team would panic if one client came back and had a complaint. And we needed to take stock and say, that was one client out of, you know, whatever the sample size was. A sample size of one is not a good sample size. So we can't make decisions based on that one. We need to take a bigger view of what's happening in the sample before we take our decision. And I think that no, but is a good way to go. So with your D's and E's, who probably aren't doing great for you anyway, start the no, buts with them. And in fact, they're probably the best people to start saying no, but to. So I think try it with your D's and E's and see. But it's not just your clients either. It's in everything else. We get distracted. We get lots of opportunities. We need to be selective in what we do. So I think learning this no, but gives you time to think about it and not always say yes.
Yeah. And I would say that my life in accounting would have been much more pleasant if the partners had said, no, we can't take on this work because we don't have the expertise to do it. There were a number of projects I worked on that I just said, I don't understand how to do this industry. This is very different from anything I've seen before. I'm not sure I'm going to get it right. Isn't that a little bit risky? Maybe the partner should have said no instead.
Yes. No, but I know somebody who's great at doing that. Would have been a very good answer.
Yes. Yes, that would have been a great answer. Now, what do you think keeps accountants from changing? Now, you've already talked a little bit on the ego part. But are there other things that keep accountants from changing?
Indeed. I won't go through John Cotter. So if anybody's interested in change management, I think John Cotter is a great writer on change and change management. And his HBR, his Harvard Business Review paper, is quite small, but it's a very interesting read. Actually, he has a book called Our Iceberg is Melting as well, which tells and talks about the eight transformation steps in a parable form about penguins on an iceberg. And it's a very quick read and great for the team actually to get involved. So without going through those eight, I think from an accounting perspective, for me, the biggest, I suppose, challenge that I see and the blocker of change is binary thinking. So, and it's a couple of things actually. It's not just binary thinking, but they're related. So binary thinking, a problem solution mentality, and also the not challenging the status quo, I think, accepting the status quo all the time. So I think those are the three biggest things that I see in accountants particularly. If you think about it, nature doesn't look at problems, it always looks to potential. And when we have a problem solution mentality, we tend to be forced into binary thinking. So I've got this problem and I'm going to solve this problem in isolation. And then I've got this problem and I'm going to solve this problem. The fact that they could be completely related, or things that you're going to do to solve one problem has a bigger and unanticipated knock-on effect somewhere else. I think that's that big challenge. So if we looked at the potential rather than always looking at problem solution, I think that's a great way to start thinking about changing and making change better. I think that problem solution also leads to a different way of thinking. So I think if we've always got this problem mentality rather than a potential mentality in our accounting firm, it means that we're always trying to justify why something won't work. So, well, this is the problem. It's not going to work for us because of this, 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 and this, and this. And these are the reasons why we shouldn't make any change, because that's the problem and we're not going to be able to solve that. So I think getting people to think about, okay, so if we could get it to work, how would we get it to work? And I think that's an important change in the question, not will this work? It's if we did get it working, how would we get it to work? I think gets a very different set of answers. So I think, like nature, I think we need to look to potential rather than look to problems. I think the binary thinking, again, though, stops us moving at a decent speed. So I think, I've come across this all the time with accountants. Oh, yeah, I'd love to do that, but what I need to do is sort this first. And I don't think we should be doing that. It's not compliance or advisory. It's compliance and advisory. So we need to start thinking ands. So if I could do this and this, what would the impact be? Not, I'm just going to do this on its own. So I think that binary thinking, that problem-solution mentality needs to stop. And I think we need to switch to a potential mindset rather than a problem mindset. I think also that whole thing about the status quo, like I don't know if this crab theory is real. I don't know if crabs actually pull each other down in the bucket. I don't know. I don't know if you've heard that story, but crabs don't like letting one escape and they always pull one person down. And I think from an accounting perspective, that tends to be a little bit the case as well. So we keep ourselves comfortable in our comfort zone and nobody goes outside the comfort zone because, oh God, what would happen? So no, don't do that. Don't do that. We don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to change things. So I think changing that mindset too, I think is really, really important. So again, this continuous improvement. I think we need to stop thinking about here and going, oh my God, that's too far. That's too big. That's too whatever. I think we need to break it down and look at taking baby steps and that continuous improvement, 1% each and every day, rather than having to take big leaps, which make breaking through that status quo look really scary. So I think it's about pushing boundaries. It's accepting that we need to make change. And I think it's about doing it in a multi-dimensional way rather than just one piece of the puzzle at a time. Is that a bit wishy-washy?
It's a difficult thing for accountants to do. But I do like the idea of aspiring for a 1% improvement, because we know how compounding interest works.
Yes.
So if you make that 1% improvement each day, then at the end of a year, you will have more than 365% improvement. You'll have much more, much more. Now, these days, client accounting services, client advisory services is really big. That's what's really big in the US these days. I believe that in the UK and other parts of the world, you're a little bit ahead of the game. But what do you think will be the next big thing in accounting?
Well, it depends on what our definition of client accounting services is, I suppose, which might help me answer the question a bit better. I think, unfortunately, despite what most people say, I think the advisory element of that is not done very, very well or done at all. And so it's not client accounting advisory services, it's client accounting services. And I think too many people think that doing management accounts or sending out reports or setting up dashboards is business advisory. And I think as a profession, we've been told these things are advisory. And if we do this, it's going to help and we can charge more from our clients, I think that definitely hasn't worked. So I don't think management reporting is advisory. I don't think doing forecasts is advisory. I pretty much see those as compliance plus personally. So I do think that we are almost on the cusp of cracking the true advisory nut. And I think it's a realization that's come, which probably brought by the lack of talent or the problems with recruitment. In the past, advisory has always been bespoke. So it's tended to rely on the more senior people in the firm, those with more experience. Because it's bespoke, it's been, it costs more money inherently. And there's no system to follow for the rest of us to follow underneath. So it's like, oh my God, how do I do that sort of stuff? I don't know what would be the first step to take.
Right.
And I also think, you know, because of that and the time, and you know, partners can only work with so many clients from that perspective. So it's very selective, the clients that they could work with. And of course, the cost makes that selection process easy for them to maintain. I saw studies done by Xero in Canada, which found that firms that did repeatable, scalable advisory had a higher average fee per client than those firms that did bespoke advisory. So that's quite interesting. I mean, it makes sense, but it's interesting to see that actually play out. So you're giving business advisory to more of your clients who are paying you more, but that actually will generate higher revenue for you than if you were doing bespoke advisory. So I think it is democratizing advisory. I think it is getting more of the team involved in delivering business advisory. I think it's giving them the skills, the confidence, the systems and processes to be able to deliver business advisory in that repeatable, scalable way. And I think that's going to be a massive breakthrough for a lot of accounting firms. I see so many small business owners go to coaches or join entrepreneurial organizations. I mean, you have them in the US. I mean, Tony Robbins has a money-making machine for a lot of small business owners. I think accountants are missing out here because business owners are desperately looking for help. And it's not just our top 10, 20%. There is probably 80% of our small business clients are looking for help. And it's about delivering it affordably to them, valuably, but affordably. But it's about how do we do that profitably for us too. And I think we're almost at the cusp with the technology, leveraging the right systems and processes to be able to get more of our team doing business advisory. And I think that will be a breakthrough that will solve a lot of challenges for accounting firms. I mean, it's going to make a massive difference to small business too. So I think the knock-on effects of this could be quite dramatic if we can get our heads around it. But I do think true advisory, democratizing advisory is probably a nut we're about to almost crack. And I think that will make a massive difference to small businesses and to the profession. I hope so.
I think you're onto something there. And I do think that democratizing those skills will be the key. You know, bringing it down so that the staff person doesn't have to start from zero, from sea level to climb Mount Everest, but maybe they can use tools and ideas and processes within the firm to bring them up to base camp. And so then from base camp, they can reach Everest for each client.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've overcomplicated a lot of the advisory process. And I think we've done that to justify fees maybe, or to justify why we are the ones that are there to help. And I think we don't understand that the business is complex, the world is complex. What we need to be doing is simplifying it. And, you know, as Da Vinci said, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. So if we could strip back some of that complexity, it means more of the team could get involved, but also it would be done more affordably and more clients could understand what we're up to and what we're doing. Because a lot of reasons I hear from accounting firms is that, oh, clients just don't get it. They don't want to pay for it. Well, if we aren't able to explain what we're doing and why and how it's going to help them, of course, they're not going to be interested and they won't get it and they won't want to pay for it.
No.
This is about involving them, understanding what they're looking for and delivering it. And I think what they're asking for is for help. They want help understanding their numbers because they don't get numbers. And, you know, too many of us as accountants give them plans with numbers and they don't get numbers. So a plan with numbers, it doesn't help. We need to help them understand what actions they need to take to make a difference and to move their business forward. And that's not about giving them the answers. That's about asking the right questions to be able to get them to understand what they need to do in their business to drive their business forward. I think we're great at keeping score, and I think the numbers never lie. So that skill is vitally important. So we can't underestimate that skill, and we shouldn't underestimate the power and the magic we have with being able to keep score and understanding the score. I think that's valuable in itself. But I think probably the biggest piece is that accountability. It's in our name. Holding our clients accountable to the actions that they've agreed is critical for success. I think too many coaches, an athlete doesn't have a coach to help them kick it or throw the ball better normally. Yes, minute 1% improvements. They generally have a coach, I think, to keep them focused, to hold them to account, and to get them to take the next step in the plan that they've created together, so that they are moving forward towards that goal. I think it's exactly the same for accountants. We can be that accountability buddy, that person who is able to understand the score, see what's working and what's not working, and just ask the right questions and say, this isn't where it needs to be. Why is that? Have you done something you shouldn't have? Have you not done something you should have done? How can we help you move your business forward? How can we show you why it was important that you did that so that those numbers moved? So I think it's a interesting skill set, but I think it's a skill set that will really excite a lot of the newbies that are coming along and give them a real desire to get back into the accounting profession. If we can see that actually we can have a massive difference, we can play a massive part in driving small businesses. And you know, Prince Charles in the UK said that accountants were going to save the world, and everybody laughed at him. I think it's a bit dramatic, but we can certainly make a big dent.
That I agree with completely. And I think that that's a perfect note to end this conversation on, that accountants can save the world. Well, I want to thank you so much, Ainsley, for joining me, for contributing your intellectual capital to me and to all the listeners. Now, if listeners want to connect with you, where is the best place to find you?
I'm pretty active on social media, so it's pretty easy to find me on Twitter. I'm maybe not so active on Instagram anymore, but you can certainly connect with me on Instagram or Facebook. I have a lot of American accountants connect with me on Facebook. I think that's through our time at QB Connect. I'm not sure, Liz, but certainly Facebook seems to be a favorite of a lot of accountants to connect with. I'm happy to chat to accountants on any forum. Of course, they can contact me by email as well, but I think a lot of people find it more fun to contact on social media. So Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, go for it. Pick your weapon of choice and get in touch.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm so glad that you agreed to talk to me. Thank you.
Liz, it's been great to see you again. So thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.